The battle of Kurukshetra took place. It said that, you know how many millions of people were on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? You know how many?
60 crore.
Yeah, 640 million people had gathered at Kurukshetra to fight. The Pandavas versus the Kauravas. And ultimately, Sanjaya had predicted at the beginning of the war who would win. Because what did he say? Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partho Dhanurdhara, Tatra Shrir Vijayo Bhutir Dhruvani Tirmatir Mama. He says, Yatra Yogeshwara, wherever there is Krishna, Yatra Partha Dhanurdhara, and wherever there is Arjuna, the devotee, Tatra, in that place, Shri, there will always be opulence, Vijay, and there will always be victory. So, Sanjaya already predicted it, and indeed it came to pass that the Pandavas won, and Yudhisthira was installed on the throne. But at a certain time, the Pandavas, when Krishna left the world, then the Pandavas also, when they realized Krishna is leaving the world, then they realized we should also leave the world. If Krishna is not here, what happens the day Krishna leaves the planet? Something else begins. Kali Yuga begins. Put your hands up if you think it's a good time to be here in Kali Yuga. Yeah, there's a silver lining. Yeah, no, that was a trick question. Yeah. It's bad and it's also the best. But that will come to later on. But the Pandavas realized now Krishna is gone, we should also go. So Pandavas decided, we should leave, we should go. And then Arjuna, his son was who? Who was Arjuna's son? Abhimanyu. And Abhimanyu's wife was who? Uttara. And Abhimanyu and Uttara had a son. And who was that son? Parikshit. Aksha means to see, isn't it? So Parikshit and Pari, what does Pari mean? Pari means all around, isn't it? Like you have the word perimeter, have you? In German, you have that word? Perimeter?
Perimeter.
It means all the way around, isn't it? So Parikshit literally means, like we do Parikrama. Krama means step. So Parikrama means to step all around. So Parikshit or Pariaksha means to look all around. He was always looking. Therefore, Parikshit means the examiner. Who was he looking for? Krishna. Why was he looking for Krishna? Because he saw him in the womb, because Krishna had come to protect. Vishnu Rata, Krishna had come to protect. So Parikshit, he took over and he became a great ruler. There were different attacks because Krishna had left, so Kali was attacking and Parikshit subdued him. And in this way, Parikshit was ruling very, very nicely. And then one day he went to the forest, he went for some excursion, and he became very, very tired, he became very, very thirsty, and then he entered the hermitage of who? Shamik Rishi. So Shamik Rishi was a great devotee. He was a wonderful devotee. He was in Samadhi. Samadhi means perfect consciousness, trance. Nowadays we don't say trance because people think of different things when they hear the word trance. You think like nightclubs and drugs and so many things if you say trance. But trance actually means someone who's completely fixed on the Supreme. So Samik Rishi was in trance and Parikshit came in. Now you have to imagine, Parikshit is like the ruler of the, you know, it's like, you know, the queen or the king or, you know, the prime minister or the president walking into the temple. Imagine this is, you know, someone just walked through. He's a big personality. And it said that once someone comes to your home, you see, this is spiritual culture, you must receive them appropriately. So it said you should offer them at least one of three things: water, some nice words, and a place to sit or rest. At least this simple thing anyone can give, no? Some sweet words, some water, some place to sit. Even if you are a poor person, you can do. So Parikshit came in. He didn't have big demands. I am the king, you know, where is my, you know. But at least he thought, some water. Okay, if not water, some words. Okay, at least I can sit down. But because Shamik Rishi was in trance, he didn't do anything. Now you have to understand, in Vedic culture, this is considered one of the most uncultured things. One of the biggest signs of culture in spirituality is how you receive guests. Isn't it? Nowadays in the world, they don't know how to receive guests. If you walk up to someone's door, there's a sign, beware of the dog. Isn't it? Nowadays when you go into, there are so many fortresses you have to go through before you can even get to someone's house. But in ancient spiritual culture, people's doors were always open. In ancient spiritual culture, the idea was before you take your meal, you go outside and you shout three times. Is anyone hungry? Is anyone hungry? Is anyone hungry? And then only if no one comes, you can turn this down, it's a little high. And then only if no one comes, you take your meal. Don't try it in Berlin. You may never eat. But can you just see how amazing it is? Even when someone is leaving your home in Vedic culture, you know, if someone is your enemy, then when they leave your home, at least you see them to the door. If someone is your friend, then when they leave your home, you don't just see them to the door, you see them all the way to their vehicle. But if someone is your very good friend, when they leave your home, you go halfway to the place they're going to. So if you're my friend, then you have to come halfway to London when I leave tomorrow, day after tomorrow. Amazing culture, isn't it? You don't just, it's just not like, okay, yeah, see you later, you know. No, no, you walk with them. That's deep culture. So you have to understand, when Parikshit came and he was not being received by Shamik Rishi, that was very shocking. And so what did he do? He bought a dead snake. Normally when you want to show someone a sign of respect, then what do you put around their neck?
Garland,
yeah. But then to put a dead snake, what does a snake represent? Envy, and also death, time. This time we were in Vrindavan actually, and I just opened the door. And luckily I saw, just as I opened the door, there was a snake there. Wow! If I had stepped, I would have stepped on the snake, and that could have been the end of time. Because there's in Vrindavan also, there can be poisonous snakes. It was a small one. But then we realize where there's a small one, there's also a big one. Because small one means a baby, and baby means there's a mother. So we were a little bit, we were very cautious for the next few days looking for snakes. Snake represents time. Kala Sarpa, we say, the snake of time. So when Parikshit put the dead snake over Shamik Rishi, it was also saying, your time is coming. It's like a sign of death. Disrespect is a sign of death. Because it said when you disrespect a great soul, then everything in your life is lost, isn't it? Your fortune, your knowledge, your everything is lost. So you must never disrespect a great soul. So Parikshit did this, and then as soon as Shamik Rishi's son found out, who was the name of Shamik Rishi's son? Shringi. So Sringi found out, and he was a young boy, and he became very, very angry. And then he cursed Parikshit that you will die in 7 days. But as soon as he uttered that curse, then he came home to see his father. And what happened as soon as he came home? This is what happened. I'll read the Sanskrit and then I'll read the English. Tato bedyashramam balo gale sarpa kalevaram pitaram vikshadu karto muktakantho rurodaha. Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Thereafter, when the boy returned to the hermitage, he saw a snake on his father's shoulder, and out of grief, he cried very, very loudly. So, just give me 1 second. Yes, okay. So, purport. The boy was not happy because he committed a great mistake, and he wanted to be relieved of the burden of his heart by crying. So after entering the hermitage and seeing his father in that condition, he cried loudly so that he might be relieved. But it was too late. The father regretted the whole incident. Srila Prabhupada ki. Put your hands up in your life if you have ever made a mistake. Thank you for being honest. Put your hands up if after making the mistake you felt very, very bad. Yes, this is the condition in Kali Yuga, that everyone is making mistakes and then later on everyone feels very, very bad about it. In the Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter, Krishna says that there are different things which cause us to make mistakes. Dambodarpo bhimanascha krodapariyosham evacha agyanam chabijatasya partasam padamasurim. Each of us have an asura bhav. Did you know that? The demons are not just Ravan, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa and all of the other personalities you read about in the Bhagavatam. Each of us have a demon within us because we all have demoniac qualities, and these qualities cause us to make mistakes. First one is dambo. What does damba mean?
Pride.
We have some pride. Yes, I should be honored, I should be respected, I should be appropriately acknowledged. And when we do that, then it's very likely that we will somewhere along the line make a mistake. Because when we're proud, we're so absorbed in ourself that we cannot see beyond ourself. So we make mistakes. Darpa. What does darpa mean? It's connected to pride. It means arrogance. We have some arrogance sometimes. Some sense that, yes, inflated conception of oneself. Krodha, what does krodha mean? Anger. Have some anger? Anger means krodha tabhavati sammoha. From anger comes delusion. So from anger, if you become angry, definitely you will make a mistake. Agyanam, what does agyanam mean?
Ignorance.
We have some ignorance, therefore we're not in knowledge, therefore likely we will make a mistake. And there's one other thing in this verse which is very interesting, Krishna says, causes us to make mistakes. Paryusham. If anyone gets this right, I'll give you a prize.
To be rough.
To be? Rough. Oh, good. Close. Yeah, close. What were you going to say?
Lust?
No, not lust.
Inconsiderate.
Yeah, and it's more specific. More specific.
Harsh.
Harsh.
Ignorant.
I have to give you a prize, Prabhu. You got it right. You read that recently? Or you just remember it?
I know this verse.
You know this verse? Okay, you memorized it. It's good to know someone who's memorized the demoniac qualities. Very good. We were once stuck in a Rath Yatra, in a traffic jam, coming back from a Rath Yatra, and in the car we learned this verse. So I always remember this verse. So yes, harshness. Harsh. Everyone in this world is harsh. Have you sometimes overreacted against someone or something? Have you sometimes prematurely judged someone? Maybe your own child, or maybe the child judged the parents, or maybe a friend. Or maybe immediately we jump to a conclusion and then it created a big, big problem. Because in this world, everyone is harsh. Everyone is overreacting. Everyone, why? Because their emotions are out of control. Therefore, people are harsh. In the world, they used to think that people who have the highest IQ were the most successful people. You understand? IQ? Intelligence? Quotient. But later on they realized, even if you have so much IQ but you don't have EQ, if you don't know how to control your emotions, what's the point of all your intelligence? So nowadays people are so emotional, their emotions are so out of control that they lose their intelligence. And because their emotions are so out of control, they are very, very harsh. Today, as we're reading the Bhagavatam, we have to stop and consider to ourselves, have I been harsh? Am I a harsh person? Here are some lessons to learn from how Sringi was very, very harsh. The first sign of him being harsh was that he acted impulsively. He didn't give time to think about the situation. He didn't give time for Parikshit to explain himself. He didn't give time to even allow Parikshit to correct himself. Do you know sometimes if someone does something wrong, just give it a bit of time. Because when you give it a bit of time, then something that you thought was very big, you realize maybe it's not so big. When you give it time, you also remember all the other good things that they did. And when you give it time, many people will correct their own mistake. You don't need to tell them. When Parikshit put the snake over Sringi, over Shamik Rishi, when he was walking back from the hermitage after doing that, what was going through his mind? Do you remember?
He was regretting.
He was thinking to myself, oh no, that was a mistake, I shouldn't have done it. If Sringi had given Parikshit the time, Parikshit already realized his mistake. He didn't need to correct him in one sense, because Parikshit knew I did something wrong. But when you're harsh, you act impulsively. You don't give people time to correct their own mistake. And therefore, you create a bigger, bigger problem. So the first sign that you have to look for in your life is make sure you don't act impulsively. When there is a problem, when there is an issue, when there is something which is causing you to become angry, the first thing is don't do anything. Because in that moment, if you act impulsively, then you are going to get yourself into more trouble. Therefore, you must always give time. But the first mistake that Sringi did is he did not give time. The second mistake of Sringi, which caused him to be harsh, is not only did he not give time, but he was skeptical. He was thinking the worst. See, do we sometimes do this? When you see someone or you see something, immediately we're thinking of the worst. We're thinking of someone doing bad. We're thinking of how, we have been mistreated. In this world, we always have the tendency to think the worst against others. Our mind is always in the mode of fault finding. But we have to understand that instead of being in that frame of mind, if we can look at situations, if we can look at people, and if we can start thinking, let us give them the benefit of the doubt, let us see maybe what could be positive in this situation, then we will move away from harshness. But the second problem with Sringi was that he was only looking for the bad. He was only seeing the bad. And therefore his reaction was harsh. Once there was a father and a son, and they had a horse, and they were walking through different villages. So they went through the first village. So they were both walking and they were taking the horse. So they were walking through the first village. And as they went through the first village, they heard the villagers saying, look at this father and child. They're so silly. One of them could be sitting on the horse and, you know, having good rest, yet both of them are walking and they're just leaving this opportunity to sit on the horse like no one's using it. Just see, silly people. No intelligence. So then they thought, oh my God, people are criticizing us. So then in the next village, the father told the son, you sit on the horse, so no one will find fault. So then as they walked through the second village, they got to the end of the village and they heard all the villagers, and the villagers were saying, just see this this child. He is so young, he's so fit, he's so healthy, and he's sitting on the horse and he's making his father walk. Just see, no intelligence, no culture. So they thought, oh God, what to do? So in the next village, the father said, you let me sit on the horse, you sit down. So they went through the third village, and then as they came to the end of the village, they heard the villagers, just see this man, he is the father, he's supposed to be the protector, he's supposed to, you know, care for his child, and he's sitting on the horse making his young child walk. God, what to do? So in the final village, they decided, we'll both hold the horse. And then you can imagine what people said at the end of that village. Whatever you do in this world, there are some people who will always see the bad. There are some people who will always criticize. There are always some people who will be skeptical and who will jump to the wrong conclusion. Am I right? Is that sometimes us? Yes, if we're honest. The inner critic. Everyone has the inner critic to look at others and see the bad. So this was the second fault of Sringi, that he was very, very harsh because he was skeptical. The third problem of Sringi was that not only did he act impulsively, not only did he act skeptically, but Sringi also acted disproportionately. Even if Parikshit made a mistake, was his reaction proportionate to the mistake? All Parikshit did was put a snake. It was some little dishonor. And for that, Sringi told him, you will die in 7 days. I mean, if that's not overreaction, I don't know what is. So to be harsh means you act disproportionately. You give someone, you react to someone much worse than they deserve. It's like once I was distributing books. So this was in Oxford in the UK. And I stopped one man. He said, oh, I'm very interested. He said, I've just come out of jail. I was like, oh, wow. I said, how long were you in jail for? Just figure out who you're speaking to, you know. So he said, I was in jail for 5 years. I said, wow, 5 years. I said, what did you do? So he said, once I was on a night out with my girlfriend, and what they did is they signaled down a taxi, you know, because they wanted to get into a taxi. So you know what happens when a taxi, it takes some time to slow down. So then it slowed down and the taxi stopped like 20 meters in front. So the taxi stopped, so they were walking up to the taxi. But what happened, as they were walking up to the taxi, another man came, and he didn't realize, so he went in the taxi, and this guy just got so angry. And he said, I don't know what happened to me in that moment. I got so angry, I went into the taxi and I just punched him. Grievous bodily harm, GBH. Police came, arrested him, went to the police station, 6 years in prison. For what? For a taxi? Because someone took your taxi? Even if he took your taxi, was it worth it? Was it proportionate? Harshness. This is the harshness. So in different ways, we are very, very harsh towards each other by acting disproportionately. Even when, sometimes you meet someone and or two people and they don't speak anymore. Why don't they speak anymore? Because there was some misunderstanding 27 years ago. And this person said this 27 years ago, and since then we did not speak. Is it worth it? To lose a whole relationship over one interaction? But we do these kind of things because we're very harsh. We act disproportionately. And the final mistake of Sringi is that not only did he act impulsively, not only did he act skeptically, not only did he act disproportionately, but Sringi also acted counterproductively. Sringi was a Brahmin. A Brahmin means to always bring some good from a situation. But was his mentality to bring good from the situation? No. His mentality was revenge. His mentality was to vent his anger. And if we do this, then we fall into harshness. Next time someone does something bad to you, when you react to them, don't just react to vent out your anger. React in such a way that they will improve, you will improve, and the world will improve. But when Sringi reacted, was it an improvement for Parikshit? He made it an improvement, but it wasn't. He was going to die. Was it an improvement for Sringi? No, he lost his reputation. Was it an improvement for the world? No. Because that day signified the disconnection between the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas. And that was a big problem in society. So if you want to avoid harshness, then you have to avoid acting in a counterproductive way. In every situation, even if someone throws some negativity towards you, you have to try to bring some good from the situation. You have to try to elevate from the situation. So as we're reading the story of Sringi cursing Parikshit, then Sringi realized, he came back to the hermitage and he started crying. Because he realized, I have been harsh. Today we have to, for some moments, think about our life and ask us, have I also been harsh? Who have I been harsh towards? And why did that harshness come about? Is it because I acted impulsively? Is it because I acted skeptically, looking at only the bad but not looking at the good? Look at how many good things Parikshit did. Parikshit drove out Kali. Parikshit was protecting all the members of the kingdom. Parikshit was upholding the Varnashram system. Sringi didn't see any of that. He just saw, oh, he cursed my father. Disrespect. But he didn't see all the good. So then we have to ask us, am I harsh because I'm acting skeptically, not seeing the good? We have to ask ourselves, am I harsh because I'm acting disproportionately? And we have to ask ourselves, am I becoming harsh because I'm reacting to the situation, bringing more negativity? What was the difference between Sringi and Parikshit? That when Sringi heard about all of this, he acted impulsively. Parikshit also acted impulsively. we can say. Parikshit was also harsh, we can say. But later on, Parikshit realized his mistake and he changed his mentality. See, Parikshit was harsh when he put the snake around Shamik Rishi. But later on, when Parikshit was cursed by Sringi, was he harsh at that time? No. That means Parikshit learned his lesson. Parikshit learned his lesson. I was harsh. In this situation, when Sringi cursed him, the act was 10 times more intense, 100 times more intense, 100 times more disrespect. To curse me, to die for such a small thing? But in that situation, even though the act was 100 times more intense, his humility had become much deeper and therefore there was no more harshness. And therefore Parikshit, when he found out the curse, there was no harshness of reaction. In the Bhagavatam it said, Tiraskrita vipra labda kshapta kshipta hata api nasyatat pratikurvanti tad bhakta pavabopihi. Even a devotee is tiraskrita, even if a devotee is defamed. Vipra labda, even if a devotee is cheated. Shapta, even if a devotee is cursed. Shipta, even if a devotee is neglected. Hata api, and even if someone tries to take the life of a devotee, nasya tat pratikurvanti tat bhakta prabhavopihi, the devotee is never inclined to get revenge. A devotee never wants revenge. You want revenge? There's some people in your mind, isn't it? Sometimes. In offices, they have the picture of the boss on a dartboard. And then they throw darts at them. People want revenge in this world. They're waiting for the time when they can get revenge on someone else. But a devotee, even if defamed, cheated, neglected, even if someone tries to take their life, they don't try to get revenge. Therefore Parikshit, no revenge. When he heard, you've been cursed to die in 7 days, he accepted it. Atmajaya suta gara pashudra vinabandushu rajecha vikale nityam virudham mamatam jaho. He gave up his family. He gave up his treasury. He gave up his position. He gave up all attachments. Virudham mamatam jaho. Things that are very difficult to give up. He just gave it up. He accepted. This is Krishna's plan. And he just walked away and he walked to the bank of the Ganga with no bitter feeling. So this is real life. Real life means you have to be free of pride. Real life means you have to be free of ignorance. Real life means you have to be free of arrogance. And real life means only begins when we're free of harshness. So therefore today as we read about Sringi cursing Parikshit, then we have to ask ourselves, let me try to overcome harshness. Because while I am harsh towards others, I will not be able to experience the happiness of spiritual life. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, so let me see whether anyone may have any questions or comments or anything. Yes, Mahaman. Great-minded. Great-hearted. Yes, please.
Thank you very much for this nice lecture. And as we talked about in the story, with the boy and the father with the horse, there's always a possibility to be critics. And I want now ask from the other side, because I can think by myself, oh, if others are criticizing me or giving me advice, I can just say, oh, they're always criticizing me, we are in the Kali Yoga and they find always something wrong. And then I can excuse my own behavior and I can do what I wish.
Yes, so it's also an art to be able to take criticism. A devotee knows how to take criticism. When someone criticizes you, the first thing we have to ask is, maybe there's some truth in this. But then you have to ask yourself, if what they're saying, say for example, what they're saying is completely untrue, a devotee can still take a positive from it, because when someone criticizes you, even if it's untrue, you can see that what the thing they're criticizing me for, I should be careful not to do that in the future. Their criticism is a warning of what I shouldn't do in the future. You can take it like that. And even if someone criticizes you, you can understand that, yes, this is Krishna giving me an opportunity to develop tolerance. Their criticism is good. Because if no one criticized you, if no one ever falsely accused you of something, then you'd have no opportunity to exhibit tolerance, because you'd have nothing to tolerate. Therefore, Krishna sends you criticism, and then you have to learn how to tolerate it, even when that criticism is wrong, because it helps you to develop deeper qualities. So therefore, a devotee knows when someone criticizes them, they ask themselves first, is it true? Maybe it is true. If you say, no, it's not true, then they say, but is there some truth in it? And if you say there's no truth in it, then you say, at least they may be warning me of what I shouldn't do in the future. And then you say, ultimately, this criticism is good for me because it helps me develop humility. So the world is full of criticism, and we all have our critics. So we can, when someone criticizes us, we can defend ourselves, or we can criticize them back. We can get into, isn't it, on the social media wars, comment wars. We can get into it, or we can just say, maybe from their criticism. But sometimes a devotee may also have to correct a criticism if there's a deeper reason. For the protection of the movement, for the protection of Krishna, for the protection of other devotees, they may have to sometimes speak out. But for themselves, no. I don't just have to defend myself. It's not so important. So yes, not only should we be careful of giving criticism, but we should also be expert in the art of how to take criticism. But yeah, the world is full of criticism. I'll tell you another story. Once there was a king, and he was giving out free khichdi to everyone. It was very kind. So he was giving out free khichdi, but then what happened, as he was giving out a free khichdi bowl to one person, above there was an eagle with a snake in its mouth, and just as it went over the khichdi bowl, some poison came out of the dead snake's mouth, went into the khichdi bowl, and then this king gave the khichdi to someone, they ate it and they died. So immediately everyone in the kingdom stopped. They said, just look at this king. He's claiming to be so magnanimous, so kind, and giving out all of these free meals, but actually these meals kill people. So then Yamaraj's assistants came, and they looked, they saw the dead person, and they said, someone's just died here. Someone has to get the karma. But who should get the karma? So then they said, maybe the king should get the karma, because he gave the khichdi out. But why should he get the karma? He had a good intention. He was trying to help people. Should he get the karma? No, that's not fair. Then they said, okay, no, the king can't get the karma. So they thought, maybe the bird should get the karma. Because after all, the snake was in the bird's mouth and the bird was flying over. But they said, why should the bird get the karma? It was just having its meal for the day. It didn't have any bad motivation. So they thought, no, the bird can't get the karma. So then they thought, no, the snake should get the karma then. Because after all, it was the poison from the snake's mouth. But then they said, but nature has arranged for there to be poison in the mouth of the snake. What can the snake do about that? They can't change that. So So they said, no, no, the snake can't get the karma. So they were baffled. They were thinking, who will get the karma? Who will? Someone has to take the karma. And then they heard someone in the background criticizing, this king, he's bogus, he's a useless waste of time, this king should be thrown out. And then Yamaraj's assistant said, I think we know who can take the karma. The critic gets the karma. So, so we should be careful, is an ancient story. We should be careful of criticism, because then we become implicated in the whole thing. But yeah, thank you for your point. A devotee knows how to take criticism. Thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Okay, Maharaj, I have a question that, like you said about being humble, like devotee tolerates everything and he's humble. But suppose in our workplace, if we like, if our colleagues are simply criticizing us, maybe for good also, but if they keep doing it or they know, then they take advantage of our humility. It may happen like that. Yeah, they take advantage of our humility and they may try to suppress us many times. So, in such situations, like
what should we do?
We should, like you said, that for us we don't do it, but for devotees we may do it. But then, if we connect our whatever we are,
yeah. So, saying if there's some other principle by which you have to speak out and defend yourself for another principle, then that's obviously allowed, you know. But we have to make sure, because we have this tendency to become very, very defensive, to protect our own ego, to prove ourselves to the world. That tendency is very, very strong. But you see, the devotees, they don't have this so much. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was in Jagannath Puri, then there was one Ramachandra Puri. And he began criticizing, just see, there are ants in his room. Now if you go India, there are ants everywhere. They said, no, no, it's clear, there are ants, this means he is eating too much sweets, too many sweets. Too many Bengali Jagannath sweets. So Mahaprabhu did not try to defend himself. Srivas Thakur, I think yesterday I was mentioning, maybe, was it yesterday or some other day? There was a Srivas Thakur was a great devotee in Navadvip, and Gopal Chappal tried to disrespect him by putting items of Devi worship, alcohol, meat, trying to defame him that he's a drunkard, he's a meat eater. Srivas Thakur did not defend himself, but everyone knew from his purity that... So you see, the devotees generally, they're not so much into defending themselves. But for a higher principle, they can become very like lions. But for themselves, no problem. The goal of life is not to prove yourself to the whole world. The goal of life is to prove yourself to Krishna. And to prove yourself to Krishna means to show that I have no more ego, I have no more pride. Yeah. It's hard, not easy. Take the mic. Because others can't hear. You have to be humble.
I want to ask you, Janamejaya was Parikshit's son?
Yes, Janamejaya was Parikshit's son. And because Parikshit had been cursed to die by the bite of a snake bird, Takshak, then after Parikshit was bitten, then he did a whole yagya to kill all the snakes in the world, Janamejaya. But then they... I can't remember who came. Someone told him and told him, no, no, you should not. So yes, Janamejaya was his son.
Thank you also for the lecture.
I have a question which is more related not directly to the lecture, but concerning the 9 processes of devotional service. There is this Bada Sevana, and Lakshmi is known as the symbol of this, but what do we actually understand? What activities can we perform, and what is the, because obviously we cannot massage the deity's feet or something like this. I don't know exactly what this meaning is.
So what does Padasevanam mean? Yes, thank you. Padasevanam, we understand Lakshmi Devi is always massaging the feet of Vishnu. But when we touch someone's feet, what is that a sign of? It's a sign of completely humbling ourselves in front of that person. Isn't it? So when you bow down to someone, in the world now they don't like to bow down. There's one disciple of Prabhupada and he said, my father always told me, in this world never bow down to anyone. That was his philosophy in life. And then later on Prabhupada met him and Prabhupada told him, if you don't bow down to anyone, then eventually you will have to bow down to death. Mrityu sarva harascham. So it's like, wow. Anyway, yeah, so bowing down means we go to the feet because it means to humble ourselves in front of someone. So when we're talking about padasevanam, because obviously we know there is also dasyam, which means service. So Hanuman is a servant of Ram. But Hanuman does all types of services. But padasevanam literally is focusing on menial service, humble service, service which is very, very insignificant, service in which someone may be in a very, very high position, who can be higher than Lakshmi Devi, but this is Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, the one in the highest material position, going to the lowest place to serve. Jai Shri Jagannath Paladev Subhadra Maharani Ki. So if you want to do padasevanam, it means to do humble service. Do that service that maybe nobody knows about. Do that service that nobody else wants to do. Do that service that nobody will give you glorification for. Do that service which is in the background. Become a humble, menial, meek servant. Like, for example, in the early days of the movement, they had Jayananda Prabhu. You may have heard that. Everyone here should know about Jayananda because you are all Jagannath Bhaktas. So you have to know Jayananda Prabhu. He is the one who began the Rath Yatra in the Western world. So Jayananda Prabhu is very, very humble. And one of his favorite services was to take out the garbage every single day, the bins. And what he would do is he would take all the garbage out, he would throw it in the pile, he would have like a pin on his nose because it was very smelly. And he would do it singing, very enthusiastic. So whenever any new devotees would come, they would come to the temple and then they would always send the new devotees to do service with Jayananda. Because good association, isn't it? We read this morning, association with advanced devotees. And one devotee, he came, and on the first day, he was with Jayananda, and his service was to take all the rubbish out. And Jayananda was so enthusiastic. He was so full of energy. It was like he was doing the most important thing in the world. He's just taking the rubbish out. And at the end of the day, this person, this new person, he came to the temple president. He said, I want to join. He said, why? He said, because I'm thinking to myself, if the garbage person in this temple is so happy, imagine what everyone else is like. He was just convinced, just by how happy he was doing menial service. So yes, the temple is a great opportunity to do menial service. So when we think of padasevanam, we can think this means menial service. Service in which I bow down and I lose my own ego and pride, and I do whatever is necessary, even if I don't get glorification or acknowledgement for it. We used to have at the manor, we used to have one devotee, and we only realized after 15 years what he was doing. And you know what he would do? After the Sunday program, when everyone would leave the temple at 10 o'clock, he would stay in the temple. He would hide, and then when everyone left and all the doors were locked, then about 11, 12 o'clock he would come out. And all night he would clean the temple. And he did this for 15 years and nobody knew, until one day they found him. He said, "What are you doing?" And he goes, "Oh, no, I'm cleaning." So that was very, very nice, because generally when we do a service, yeah, everyone should know. I gave a donation. Make sure my name is there. Or, you know, we are expecting some kind of acknowledgement, some kind of appreciation. Pada Sevanam, no, humble servant. Krishna knows. That's what's most important. The whole world may or may not know. Like if you go to Vrindavan, there's the Madan Mohan temple. And the Madan Mohan temple, it was, have you been? Has anyone been? It was gifted or it was sponsored by someone called Raj Kapoor. He was a salt merchant. Very. So after he gifted the temple, they said to him, "We want to honor you in the temple." He said, "No, no, I don't need any glorification, nothing." They said, "No, we want to honor you." So then he said, "Okay, make a deity of me." They thought, like, my God, he's going from one extreme to another. We thought he was humble. He didn't want any glorification. Now he's saying, make a deity of me. So they made a small deity. And he said, "Now what I want you to do is go to the back of the temple." And you know in India, when they clean the floor, then they just throw the water. And then what do? They brush it. And what do? They brush it into the gutter. So what he said is, "I want you to put this deity at the back of the temple where the pipe comes out, where all the water is drained. So that every day I will get the abhishek of the lotus feet of all the pilgrims who are visiting Vrindavan." That was good. He thought, okay, yeah, he's humble. Amazing, huh? I just want to be under that gutter where all the dust of the lotus feet, the abhishek of all the pilgrims, the Vaishnavas, will bless me on my head, so that maybe one day I'll get Krishna's blessing. Yes, this is humility. This is Padasevanam. This is a Vaishnava. Maybe the whole world will see, or maybe they will not see. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, but what should we do when we do this humble service one day?
What should we do when we do the service?
When we do the service and then these thoughts are coming that I do.
Yeah. You can be proud about being humble. It's amazing. We're proud if we do nothing, we're proud if we do everything, we're proud if we do a small thing or a big thing. Yeah, even if those thoughts come, we try and stay in the background. Never try to advertise yourself. They say there are three things you should always keep secret. Who is your guru, your mantra, and also the seva that you're doing. No, we don't have to advertise. Have you seen my CV? You have CV in Germany? Yeah, that's what they call it, a resume. No. Who am I? Krishna did so much for me, and whatever I'm doing is insignificant in comparison. So that's actually why a devotee doesn't advertise themselves, even they do big things, because in their mind they're just thinking, even if I do a big thing, it's completely insignificant in comparison to everything Krishna has done for me. Therefore, it's embarrassing to say that I've done this. But what is this? If tomorrow someone gives you £1,000,000 and you kind of, you know, give them like a cookie back or something, like, you can't really be proud about that. I mean, they just gave you £1,000,000 and you're going to give them a cookie. Of course, if it's Mahaprasadam, it's worth more than £1,000,000. But so a devotee is naturally humble because it doesn't matter. Oh, and I gave such a big donation. And Krishna gave you a whole life. So what? But if you want to give a donation, we're taking. we need 3 million euros. We need 3 million euros. If anyone's got something lying around, we want to make a temple for Jagannath. Prabhupada said to Mr. Sethi in Bombay, he was in charge of the construction firm. So he was building Juhu Temple for Prabhupada. So he was like the CEO, but he was on the ground in his boots, laying the bricks himself, because he was like, this has to be done properly. So one day Prabhupada was leaving Mumbai, and Prabhupada said, I want to see Mr. Sethi. Mr. Sethi said, who am I? I don't want to go, I'm insignificant, I just want to do this service, I don't want... The devotee said, Prabhupada will not leave until he wants to see you. So Mr. Sethi was so prominent but so humble, he thought, who am I? So he went to see Prabhupada reluctantly. So as soon as he entered the room, Prabhupada was so happy, he embraced him. And he said, Mr. Sethi, you could have taken so many projects on, but you took the project on to build Krishna's temple. And he looked at Mr. Sethi and he said, because you are building a temple for Krishna, know for sure that Krishna is building a home for you in the spiritual world. And then he just broke down crying. Prabhupada is so kind. So ultimately we get the benefit. Whatever service we do, we get the benefit. There's nothing to be proud about, because we are the one getting the benefit. Seva adhikara diye koru nija dasi. Service is a privilege. When I was 21, I was thinking of joining the temple, and all the devotees were trying to convince me, join the temple, join the temple. At one point, you know, I was in a room surrounded by 15 devotees, and they were all telling me, join the temple, join the temple. So in my mind, some pride came. I thought, yeah, these guys think I'm like important. They've spotted something very special in me. Clearly, maybe I'm the chosen one. Why are they giving me so much attention? Yeah, I always knew I was special. So some thoughts were in my mind. Anyway, then all of the devotees left and one devotee remained back. And he said, sit down. He could read my mind. And then he said something which was so humbling, but which was so inspiring. And he said, sit down, sit down. So I sat down. And he said, Lord Chaitanya's movement is going to spread to every single town in this village, whether you join the movement or not. And then he said to me, but do you want to be a part of the adventure? And I said, yes, sign me up. I want to be in it. Ultimately, it's going to happen with or without us. Tomorrow if we decide, no, I'm going to walk away. No one appreciated my service here. I'm going to walk away. Rest assured, it's all going to go on. Krishna doesn't need any of us. But in Krishna's service, nobody is necessary, but everyone's useful. So if we stay, we're going to be part of it. You're going to be part of the greatest movement. In 20 years, there's going to be a temple, a huge temple in Berlin. And hopefully, all of us will be able to look back in 20 years' time, 2043, and look back and say, yeah, yeah, we were there. We played some small part 20 years ago to make it happen. And you know, you'll feel very, very happy to be part of Krishna's service. So yeah, we have to try. So let us try to build a temple for Jagannath. Yes, very powerful, the jewel. You have to take the microphone.
Hare Krishna. Yeah. So Maharaj, I have a question on Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam is called as the book incarnation of Krishna. So there is no difference between Krishna and Bhagavatam itself. And it is said that like we should not hear the Bhagavatam, but we should relish the Bhagavatam. And of course, it's applicable for reading as well. So when we read the Bhagavatam, how can we relish it? And what should be our mood while reading it? And you know, and how can, while reading, how can I, how can we, you know, make maximum benefit in our spiritual life?
We should not read the Bhagavatam, we should relish the Bhagavatam. Nigamakalpataror galitam phalam sukha mukhad amrita dravya samyutam. The Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit on the tree of Vedic knowledge. Have you ever tasted a mango, a ripe mango? You just touch it, immediately juice. So dravya samyutam means the Bhagavatam is like semi-solid. It's a fruit that you don't even have to chew. Pibata Bhagavatam rasamalayam. Drink it, relish it. But then we open the Bhagavatam and we fall asleep. Isn't it? They say devotees get 7 hours of sleep every day, 6 hours at night and 1 hour in the Bhagavatam class. We are not experiencing the Bhagavatam in that way. For us it's difficult, it's heavy, it's philosophical, it's confusing. Dare I say, it's boring. Is it boring?
No?
Sometimes. Oh, there we have an honest man. Thank you. Kali Yuga is still resting on truthfulness. Yes. Sometimes we feel it to be boring. Jai Shri Jagannath Paladev Subhadra Maharani Ki, Shri Shri Gaurinitai Ki. So in the beginning you have to read. In the beginning, from day one, you not be able to relish straight away. But you have to read every day. Nasta prayeshva bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. Every day you must render service to the Bhagavatam. How? By reading it. So in the beginning you have to read. But then what gradually happens when you read? Shrinvatam svakata Krishna punyashravana kirtana ridyanta stohya bhadrani vidunohuti suratsatam. The abhadrani, the unfavorable things within the rida, the heart, are gradually cleansed by the hearing of Bhagavatam. And then when you have a pure heart, then you can relish Bhagavatam. But shall I tell you another secret? You may say, well, but how long will it take me? It will take me so many lifetimes to become pure-hearted and relish Bhagavatam. There's a shortcut. You know how? Satam prasangan mama virya samvedo bhavanti ritkarna rasayana katha. If you want the shortcut way to relish Bhagavatam, even if you're not a pure devotee, you relish the Bhagavatam with those who are pure-hearted. You read the Bhagavatam together. You hear the Bhagavatam from someone who's living the Bhagavatam. And then you will say, I could sit here all day and listen. When someone has that kind of taste. So yes, the Bhagavatam is the greatest love story. How excited are you when you open your WhatsApp to read who messaged you? Excited? How excited are you to open your emails to see who has messaged you? How excited were you, for those of you who were 10, 15, 20 years ago, when you received a letter from your sweetheart? Oh, then, very excited, heartbeat. One day you'll open the Bhagavatam and you'll see the Bhagavatam in the same way. You'll be as excited, as enthusiastic, as energized. There was Gadada Pandit in Jagannath Puri, and he was reading Bhagavatam every day. You know what he was reading? He was reading two pastimes every single day. You know which two? Fourth canto Dhruva, seventh canto Prahlad. Every day he was reading Gadada Pandit. Later on, Srinivas came to him, because Srinivas had a dream that if you want to learn Bhagavatam, then you have to hear from Gadada Pandit. So he came to Jagannath Puri and he met Gadada Pandit. So he said, Mahaprabhu told me I can learn Bhagavatam from you. Gadada Pandit said, yeah, I'll teach you Bhagavatam. So Gadada Pandit said, here is the Bhagavatam. So Srinivas took it and he opened it and he couldn't read anything. Because when Gadada Pandit was reading Bhagavatam, he was shedding tears and all the tears had blotched the whole manuscript. So Gadada Pandit said, yes, yes, I'll teach you Bhagavatam. And Srinivas said, but I can't read any. I can't read. So then Srinivas Acharya, he told Srinivas, go to Srikanda and you have to get it copied. Because at that time, there's no just, it's not like, oh, here's another set, you know. No, no, there's no, you have to get it copied. So he traveled to Srikanda to get another copy of the Bhagavatam. But by the time he came back, Gadada Pandit had died, left, passed away. He thought, oh no, I missed my opportunity. Anyway, later on he got the association of the Goswamis. So yes, we have to read, we have to relish. First read, and then relish. And if you find that you just can't relish, then hear the Bhagavatam with those who are relishing. And then you will see, oh wow, you right now, you see right now, we are going into the Bhagavatam, we're getting some information. Don't be harsh, don't criticize, don't do all of these things. And then we're coming out and then we're walking out and living in Berlin. But now with the knowledge of Bhagavatam. So that's nice. But this is lower level. Right now we're going into the Bhagavatam to get something so then we can come out and live our life. But later on, you will go into the Bhagavatam just to be in this world. You see this? This is not just a picture of the spiritual world. This is the spiritual world. And one day it will come to the point that you open the book, you read the Bhagavatam and you lose yourself. You get lost in this world. You forget the world. I was in London with one of our devotees. He works for an investment bank. And so I asked him once, what did you do on Sunday? What did you do on Sunday? So he said, I opened the Bhagavatam. I started reading at 10 o'clock. I said, then what did you do after that? He said, I carried on reading. I said, and then? He said, I carried on reading. I said, what time did you stop? He said, 11 o'clock at night. That's amazing, huh? There are devotees who have learned the art of how to relish the Bhagavatam. Can you imagine that? Start reading at 10 and finish at 11? 13 hours? He said, I could have gone longer, but I had to go work the next day. That is a wealthy devotee who has taste for Harikatha. That is a great treasure. So let us relish. Bibhata Bhagavatam. Oh dear sir, learn to drink the Bhagavatam. But you have to become a rasika. understand. Bhagavatam says, Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam Muhuraho Rasika. Are you a Rasika? Understand the word Rasika? Rasika means one who can taste rasa. It means, I don't know how they say in German, a connoisseur. Yeah, I don't know. Connoisseur of devotion. You know, like sometimes there are these people, they take a small cup of wine and they taste one drop. And just by tasting one drop of wine, they can understand this type of wine, this year, they are connoisseurs of wine. Because they have developed the taste to be able. We will not understand anything about wine. Hopefully not. But the connoisseur, he can understand, this is this wine from this year. They can see the differences. For us, it's all the same. So when you become a connoisseur of the Bhagavatam, every word, prati shloke, prati akshare, nana arthaka, you will read one word and you'll go into a whole. Have you noticed, like sometimes Parikshit, he's hearing genealogy. And this person, his son was this person, and his son was this person, and his son was this person. And at the end of the genealogy, hearing it is saying, and Parikshit was in complete bliss. And you're thinking, what's so blissful about that? It's just hearing people's names. What's so blissful about that? But it is blissful, because for us it's just a name. But for Parikshit, when he remembers the name, then he remembers the person, the qualities, the so many things. So it's relishing. Hare Krishna. Yes, Sebastian. Sebastian, right?
Yeah. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for this class. I just had one small question between what you were saying about relishing the Bhagavatam, because I feel like the more that I listen to the Bhagavatam, or like the more that I listen to it, like I start relishing it more, but then also like troubles come in my life, like it's like I'm getting more annoyed at people who are saying things that I find like
So in one sense you feel like you're advancing in your taste for Bhagavatam, but then you see negative qualities coming out in you that seemingly like, so how does that work together? Yeah, one person once came to me. He said, I have to stop chanting Hare Krishna. I said, why? He said, since I've been chanting Hare Krishna, I'm becoming a worse person. I was like, really? And then what I explained to him is that when you're cleaning a room, then what happens? Just like this room looks very clean. It is clean, but let's just imagine it's not clean for a moment. When you look at a room, it looks clean. But then when you start cleaning, what happens? All the dust starts coming out of the corners, isn't it? I have to check. And when you start dusting, then all the dust comes to the surface. So when you're 1 hour into the cleaning, the room is becoming cleaner, but the room looks more dirty. But how can it be more dirty if it was? Because that dirt was there, but now you're becoming more aware. Now you're coming face to face with it. One devotee once said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I don't have any lust. Prabhupada said, go to a psychologist. I have any lust, are you sure? Even when I came to the movement, every other class, maybe it was that time in the Hare Krishna movement, every other class was about lust. Like, man, lust, and everyone is so lusty, and lust, and attraction between man. And I was like, what's wrong with these people? Like, why are they always talking about lust? Like, relax, it's not such a big problem, you know? You don't even realize how much all of these things are in your heart until you actually advance. So sometimes you may feel that you're going down, that negative things are coming within you, but it's actually a process of purification. Do you know that when you take homeopathic medicine, the sign that the medicine is working is that your disease actually gets worse before it gets better? So if you're taking homeopathic medicine, say for example you have a skin rash and you take homeopathic medicine, I've done this before, the skin rash actually gets worse. But that's good. And then it disappears. Because it's a process of purification. Everything is coming to the surface and then boom, then it goes. So sometimes we may experience that. But the other thing is this, that reading Bhagavatam is only one indication of your advancement in spiritual life. You have to also see what are the other aspects of your spiritual life looking like. Is your chanting offenseless? Is your association with the devotees offenseless? Is your other practices, are they inattentive? Because if you have deficiency in other practices, it can also create new anarthas, you see. So therefore it's complicated. Our psychology is complicated. So these are some thoughts. Hope that's okay. Hare Krishna. I'm okay to go, but I don't know about time. Because it's quite long, no? And then there's another program. I'm okay, but it's like everyone here, and then, you know, I don't want you to curse me for delaying your prasadam. I don't mind, the bosses are there. Like Shravanti and Jainitai, you are the final timekeepers.
Not asleep yet, so
someone better start falling asleep if you want to get out.
I think they still want to hear, so maybe we say like 10 minutes, something like
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thanks a lot for the wonderful lecture and the question and answer. We are really relishing it. So Maharaj, I am going back to that today's lecture topic on criticism. Sorry for that. So Maharaj, how can we stop that in our heart that we are going to criticize or judge someone in the root of that? And my second question would be in the lectures of His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, he emphasizes again and again that never judge someone or never criticize any devotees. But being in the community of the devotees, sometimes we have to be in some circumstances where someone else is criticizing someone else.
Yeah, then you have to speak out.
And I am in the middle of those kind of situations. So what should we do on those situations?
So first point, what should we do when we feel critical towards someone else? This is the first thing. Don't just see how far someone is away from the ideal, but see also how far they've come. You see, when we're looking at the devotees, we're thinking, that person is way short of the 26 qualities of a devotee. Very far away. But can you see where they were 10 years ago before they started Krishna consciousness and how much they have improved? So that's the first thing. When we look at a devotee, we shouldn't just say, they're this much far away from the ideal. But can you see how much they've already improved? Then you get a more wholesome understanding. Right. Just like there were two devotees in the pujari room, and then they had an argument, and one devotee just spoke really harshly, and then later on the other devotee said, no, that was not Vaishnava etiquette. He said, it's advancement. If that was 10 years ago, I would have punched you. This time I only said a few bad things. That doesn't justify it, but we should see like this. So this is the first thing. Look at the devotees and see how much they've improved, even if they're not perfect. Second thing is see all the good things that they're doing also. We only see the bad things. But when you, like Sringi, he only see, oh, you put a snake around. But did he see that? You drove Kali away. You're upholding Varnashram. You were going around the kingdom selflessly, fighting all the negative. He didn't see all of that. No, you are disrespected. So what happens is we take one thing, but then we make it bigger than it is. So we must also see the good things. And you know why we don't see the good things in others? Because when we often see good things in others, we never say anything. Only when someone does a bad thing, then we're ready to say. But can you also, if someone does something nice, can you also appreciate them? Because when you appreciate them for what good they've done, then when it comes to the point where they do something bad, it will be more in your mind, you'll be able to put it in perspective. So don't wait to say something until someone does something wrong. When they do something nice, you can also. It's not a crime to glorify the Vaishnavas. Don't worry. It's going to be good for you. And so before we criticize, we should also do this. And then the third thing is, before we criticize, we should also remember Prabhupada's quote, that your love for me will be shown by how much you cooperate. So even if sometimes we feel like we want to criticize, if we know that it's going to create division, it's going to create, then for the higher principle, no, Prabhupada wants us to cooperate. I should not become so critical. But then sometimes you have to say something. Because what if someone's doing something wrong, and clearly it's not good for them, it's not good for the community, then what do you do? So first thing is you should question, am I the right person to say it? It's not that every criticism has to be given by you. No, I'm happy to do that service. We know you're happy to do that service. But maybe you are not the one to do that service. Maybe there's someone else who can do that service better than you. So if you need to correct someone, ask yourself, am I the right person? Even if you're the right person, ask yourself, do I have the correct motivation? Am I really doing it for their good, or am I doing it to boost my own ego? Even someone may be doing something wrong, they need to be corrected, and maybe you are the person to correct them, you're in a position, but if you don't have the right mood and mentality, sometimes it's better not to correct them, because it may reinforce your own false ego. So second thing is, do I have the right motivation? Third thing you have to ask is it the right time? Kaler dosha nidhe rajan. Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. If you want to find things to correct and people to criticize, don't worry, you're going to have plenty of things. But what we have to understand is many times people will correct themselves in time. So give it time. Maybe it's not the right time. So there are many things we have to think of before criticizing or correcting someone. But nowadays in the world, as soon as someone sees someone something, what do they do? Put it out there on the internet. Put it out there on social media. Comment. And then open up a hole, and then you become offensive. And then you lose mercy. Because maybe you got it wrong. Maybe, just maybe, you got it wrong. Maybe, just maybe, you misjudged someone. And then, if you did, and the devotee gets hurt, then Krishna is not pleased. So, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Be very, very careful before you have to raise something negative, isn't it? Like when you go to a power station, they have that sign, isn't it? Radioactive. And they have a skull and a crossbones. Keep out. Be very careful. Otherwise you can destroy your spiritual life. You lose all your taste. Hare Krishna. Okay. Mahaman Prabhu, you get the last question.
Thank you. I have a... I can speak loud. I have an additional question to the last question. You told we should glorify as a devotees, but I heard also... I know this word only in German, maybe somebody can translate it. We should not loben the devotees.
Flatter, yeah.
As if somebody makes a nice kirtan, we should... Mm. I heard from one devotee...
So flatter means there's a difference between flattery and appreciation. There's a difference. First difference is when you genuinely appreciate someone, is based on something which is actually true. But when you flatter someone, you're giving some nice words, but none of it is based in truth. Understand? So say for example, musically, it wasn't a good kirtan. But then you go to the devotee and you say, that was like, wow, you know, the way you played the mridanga and the tunes and the melody, it was like, my heart was like in waves of ecstasy. It's nice words, but we know, that's not true. So, but appreciation is when you say like, no, but the way you led that kirtan, you know, you did it with a focus on the deities, you did it and you included the devotees so nicely, you can appreciate someone's kirtan for the real reason, not just for some fabricated words. You understand the difference? And the second thing is, you know how to tell the difference between flattery and appreciation? If I genuinely appreciate you, you will actually feel more humble. But if I flatter you, it may awaken pride within you. When you genuinely appreciate someone, because you're doing it with such sincerity, they will actually become humbled by it. When you genuinely appreciate someone. So therefore, nowadays people don't know the art of how to appreciate others, how to offer nice words. We don't know the art. This is actually a deep spiritual culture, to know how to appreciate other people. Nowadays, because we're so self-absorbed, we're not observant enough to even see what's going on around us to be able to find something genuine to appreciate. Just thinking about, isn't it? So, learning how to appreciate and appropriately praise others is actually a wonderful devotional service. And it's a real art. And I tell you another thing, that when you want to appreciate someone, sometimes you may feel, if I appreciate them directly, it will not be good for them. But you can appreciate them to other people. What about that? If someone is doing something nicely, why can't you go to five other people and say, you know, yeah, the way Mahaman Prabhu, you know, does this service is incredible, you know. Have you seen? It's such a... And just see how your mentality begins to change when you appreciate others. You will see other people in a different way. You will. That's how you build community, actually. Community is built upon appreciation. Everyone has some unique thing that Krishna has given them. Let us find that and let us glorify that. And in that way we see Krishna everywhere.